I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
What's up? I'm Laura Correnti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia, episode 12.
The Dirty Dozen.
The Dirty Dozen. And we got someone who's squeaky clean.
Yes.
Who's joining us, Keith Grossman, the CRO of Bloomberg Media.
So excited to have Keith. He is like literally everywhere.
We've known him for actually before he was at Bloomberg, when he was at Wired. And we think that Bloomberg is really interesting because they're well positioned, not just as a media company, right? But they have a portfolio of products. And something that we're going to talk about, I think, pre-Keith is they really own business audience in a different way.
Right.
And they have opportunity to break out because they don't have the legacy relationships to cable companies, to carrier fees, to those types of things that a lot of business news and media has today.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we should dive into a little bit that appears to be on everybody's mind these days is this idea of renting versus owning your audience. And I think the Facebook, Google duopoly, which basically owns the world, and this idea that publishers are feeling
a squeeze
is a nice word, basically saying like, look, we have no choice seemingly but to put our content on these platforms for discovery because this is where audiences are, in the feed or in the nav bar or whatever the case may be, within those Facebook, Google platforms and ecosystems. And so what does this leave us with? And
doesn't leave us with audience, right? That we actually own. And you were going to say, like, we talked to David Plotz on, I don't remember what episode it was, but about Atlas Obscura. And he had a really smart, really clear comment about what happens for publishers when they're just promoting on Facebook.
Right. Like, you syndicate your content, you put it out there because you can target right down to seemingly the person or very, very close to. And they see your article, they see your video, but you don't create a relationship with them.
No.
They've kind of thanked Facebook for putting something relevant in their feed and they move on. And then it's like, was that Atlas Obscura or was that Expedia or was that Airbnb? I don't know.
Yeah.
But did it matter? No, because I read the content and I moved on.
Yeah.
And I think his point was,
you own it. You don't own audience. And then what do? How do you actually create a relationship that can go further and actually can be monetized in meaningful ways to the publisher or brand from a financial perspective and from a building out product perspective, but also you're doing it based on what the audience wants and likes and you're super serving them.
Right, which brings an interesting intersection in the industry in the fact that, you know, you would then go to Bloomberg because you know that people are engaging with that brand. Where I think what David Plotz was getting to was, if I'm a brand, why do I need to go to Atlas Obscura when I can just cut through and build similar content and use Facebook's platform and audience to reach that same demographic,
psychographic. Reach that same person, right?
Right. And so that puts media companies on their back foot to say, what else do we have in this house that we can offer to brands to engage them from a unique point of view?
This is classic marketing, right? You don't build a product because you need to build a product, right? To monetize. You build a product to serve a market need.
Right.
Right?
And this
What's the market need?
Right.
And then you go in.
And I think one of the most astonishing things in this industry is for many of the larger media companies, I don't even think they've begun to tap into
or think about that.
Or think about exactly.
Yeah.
Like, what do I have within the confines of this company that nobody else can produce? So if you come to me, Hulu, or you come to me, ESPN, or you come to me, insert, you know, expert in this industry to the table and say, yeah, we can give you eyeballs and audience, but actually I want to offer you intelligence.
Yeah.
I want to educate you on what people are doing in their homes, sun up to sundown around streaming.
Binging.
I'd rather pay you for that, Hulu, than some Nielsen data set that's 6 months old.
Ah, yes!
That is a 1,000-person sample, and we don't know who those 1,000 people are.
Yep.
So diversify your portfolios, people. come to us with something other to sell than a 300x250. And after this break, we're going to wake up on a Magic Tuesday with Keith Always on Grossman,
and
the
CRO. And
there
will be no 300x250s.
We'll be back with Keith Grossman from Bloomberg. So we're back with Keith Grossman, the CRO of Bloomberg.
Welcome, Keith.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A buddy of ours.
Long time.
And if anyone doesn't know Keith, then something's wrong with you.
Yeah, you need to be on Instagram.
If you're not, yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah,
if you don't
need to
know
be on
Keith,
Instagram, but you should follow Keith on
Instagram.
Right,
exactly.
What's your Insta handle?
I try to make it very simple. Keith Grossman.
I love it.
So, Keith, you were actually, before we get into all of the fun things happening at Bloomberg Media, tell everybody your favorite marketoonist.
Your marketoon.
No, it's marketoonist.
Oh, sorry.
Tom Fishburne. If you don't follow him on Instagram, he's amazing. But he's a cartoonist who does cartoons that depict the ridiculousness of our industry.
Which is also the impetus of the show.
I know. This is why I bring it up. I think it's great. But my favorite all-time cartoon is, because I have a three-year-old daughter, Ellie, and it's a father, and he is sitting next to his daughter at bedtime. She's in her bed, and the caption is, she's holding a book, and it says, "Daddy, will you read me this piece of branded content tonight?"
And that's your litmus test.
I have yet to find an editor that finds it funny, but
I love that.
But no, but in all seriousness, I think that it represents a really important aspect of our industry, which is there is a point where when you digitize content and you put it online, nobody distinguishes between whether or not it is sponsored or if it's editorially driven. They only see it as sponsored if it is bad.
Yep.
Interesting.
And I think that the two of you from just knowing you both for years would agree 100% on that.
We do.
We do.
So tell us a little bit about what you've got going on at Bloomberg Media. And you've just come off the upfronts and a lot of news that came out of that.
Twitter. Streaming.
Yeah.
News. Love it.
Sure. So I don't know how familiar you are with what Twitter is doing in terms of where they're looking at their business. But as they realize that one of the areas that they can grow on is in terms of moving away from text-based messaging and moving more towards video streaming, we had the very fortunate ability to take the existing partnership that we've had with Twitter and, you know, parlay it into ultimately what will be a 24/7 live breaking news social network that will go on air in November 15th is what date we're aiming for. And it's we're going to be the exclusive news network of Twitter through 2018. And, you know, the response in the marketplace has been amazing.
Was the coverage that you did of the 2016 election a proxy for that?
During the election cycle, one of the things that we realized was we have a huge advantage by not having the authentication requirements that other cable providers have. So we could stream over the top to, you know, Apple TV and Samsung smart hubs and the Roku devices. But then Twitter approached us and we were able to also partner with them and stream the presidential debates. The first one comes around, we have 2.1 million people watching us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Second one comes around, we have 2.4 million. The third one comes around, we have 3.2 million people who are watching this. So we're really on to something. This is very interesting.
Right.
Following that, we went to Twitter and we struck an agreement where we took three non-endemic shows that we broadcast every day on Bloomberg's linear TV, which is Bloomberg Daybreak America, our morning show, Bloomberg What'd You Miss, which is from with Joe Wiesenthal, who joined us about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago from Business Insider, and Bloomberg Technology. And every day since October, we've been broadcasting these three shows. You could just watch them live on Twitter. The same type of experience. And we have about 1 million people a day who tune in and watch this.
How does that rival your linear audience?
It's significantly
larger. Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge area.
It's unbelievable. You know the answer.
I know, but I want you to ask.
But picture this, right? So Bloomberg's linear TV has always been very niche, very specific,
yes,
very focused on the financial core industry, which is why we chose three shows that were non-core, right? Based on the success of those three shows that we had, that's what led to the Twitter deal. But if you want a stat, and this is where I was saying, how, you know, granular do you want to get? But this is something that I think you would really love. If you want a stat that will blow your mind, when the Comey testimony took place, we were the only camera in the courtroom that could live stream it over Twitter. right?
Yeah. And that was a part of your Twitter exclusivity?
Well, yeah. I mean, we just, Twitter came to us and they said, do you want to live stream this as well? And at the last minute, we just said yes. We thought it made sense. It was also good proof of concept. We learned so much about this. And, you know, a lot of what we're learning with the viewing experience over Twitter is very similar to when, like, I launched and worked on the launch with my team on the tablet edition of Wired back in 2010, where you think you know everything until consumer behavior starts taking place and yeah. you start realizing a lot. But we do the Comey live stream, and 2.7 million people watched the Comey live stream over the Twitter feed through the Bloomberg feed, right?
Wow.
To give you a comparison, 19.5 million people in total watched the Comey testimony on cable television. So we had the 0.13 Nielsen rating on Twitter. But to give you an even bigger example, during the Comey testimony, not only did 2.7 million people watch it, 3.6 million tweets took place during that ceremony, during that testimony.
God, and it was not a ceremony.
It was not a ceremony.
Well, it depends what side of the aisle you're on.
Yeah. That we're not talking about tonight. Yeah. No, but of the 2.7 million, 88% were under the age of 35.
It's awesome.
So if you want to talk about cord cutting being a real stat, you know, cord shaving being a real issue, this is the reality of streaming and video content. You know, the word TV is not going to go away, but it will evolve. You know, my daughter, your daughter will look at the world and they'll say, I want to watch TV, but they won't mean I want to watch linear TV. They don't have that relationship with you know, their cable provider. They have the relationship with a screen and the viewing experience.
That's right. I mean, we've said a couple of things. I was talking to someone about this yesterday, actually. I was like, why can Bloomberg do this? Why can they're actually ripe, right, for this type of relationship with Twitter? Because you don't have the same relationships with cable. You don't have the fees and the contracts and the, right? You're not held to that old model, which is genius. It is totally open. It lets you guys play in areas that no one probably can play in as quickly.
100%. Right? So, I mean, our goal is to ultimately be as aggressive as possible, to be as innovative as possible, but not just to do innovation for innovation's sake. I mean, you could just constantly say, I'm doing new, never done before. But at the end of the day, for Bloomberg, the goal is not to just do that and be the first. The goal has to be that there has to be utility to the user, right?
Yes.
So if you look at it, like, that wasn't the same thing with when I was at Wired. And that's not a knock on Wired, but the expectation of the consumer audience is if it's new, Wired has to be there, right? If the expectation of Bloomberg is if it's new and you're there, it better add value to my life. And
yeah.
So the case of Twitter, it makes a lot of sense. In the case of, you know, Amazon Alexa, us giving, you know, the updated news feed, you know, is very important. Us being on the Echo show the day it launches is very important. Us being on, you know, even the iWatch, like for certain things, and on Samsung smartwatch upon launch, very important. Us playing with VR. Like we do it, right? But the reality is, you know, it's such a small niche area in the grand scheme of the consumers who adopt it and actually play with it, that there's no huge payoff to be in that area. Now,
Not yet.
But
we have talked about this.
I know. But I would say it's about the year 2020 that VR actually scales. And at that point, I would point out that maybe AR is more interesting than VR.
So talk to us about Studio. Like, talk to us about what do you do? What is Bloomberg? You know, do you have an ad innovation lab? Are you doing anything? Like, not that you need it, right? But like, do you have something where you're actually looking at how are we going to change the experience, you know, whether it's incrementally or not, for these new types of screening devices and experiences.
And is it ad content? Because we've talked quite a bit back and forth with Alexa and I in meetings with you, you know, about is content really the first thing that Bloomberg should be monetizing? We're like, we've always been interested in the intelligence angle. And so we like shook you, right? It's like, you can't get this shit anywhere. Like, this is amazing.
Wait, is this like a R-rated podcast?
Well, there's no FCC, so it's
fine. Oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah, you can curse.
I'm trying to cool down on this right now. So to answer your question, I would say a few things. So can I step back for one second on it? Which is, I think that it's very easy for people to speak into tentatives, right? So people will say things like, people hate advertising. And I think that that's bullshit.
You just sent me the book, End of Advertising by Andrew Essex, by the way. 100%.
But the whole premise of The End of Advertising by Andrew Essex, which I thought was a very fun
read. We're going to have him on the show, hopefully. Andrew, you're coming on the show.
He knows I bought 300 copies of the book. I think I'm his number one purchaser.
Probably.
Right?
I've been seeing Keith Grossman pop-ups on other people's channels now of notes from Keith.
I know. I love.
So
I
now you're penetrating everybody's.
It's hilarious on LinkedIn. And then I was like, "Where's my book?" I got kind of like jealous. I'm like, "Where's my book?"
I got a note from your person that I was sending it to the wrong address.
And I didn't get one.
The only time
you
did.
You'll get one tomorrow.
Okay. Anyway, I did. I got jealous when I saw this guy's note, and I was like, "Where's my note?" The next day,
I got all the best go at the same time.
Thank you.
I make sure.
I just want to know who's writing those notes. Is it you? No way.
Yeah. My hand fucking hurts. Excuse me. no, but here, you know, like, I think people want to say that advertising's dead or this is awful. It's bad advertising. Nobody wants bad advertising. Nobody wants it to be intrusive or offensive or bothersome. And like the whole point of his book is when all you're doing is creating to create and you're not actually thinking about what the experience is, then all of a sudden you're missing the bigger point. And when you're trying to force feed like or force fit something into the wrong canvas or the wrong experience or the wrong expectation, it's a big miss. But if you look at one of the most amazing elements of advertising and the two examples that he gives in the book, and now you might not even need Andrew Essex on this show. I am pretty much, you know, his PR on this. But if you look at the premise, and he gives two really good examples, which were, you know, City Bike, which did a tremendous amount for, you know, the city brand in terms of lifting it up from where it was from 2009
bailout
to today.
Yeah.
Right. It adds a tremendous amount of utility. There's no doubt in my mind that it is paid off on its ROI, regardless of what the metric is worth, and that it's worth every penny of what that investment was. And then take something on the flip side of it, like the Lego movie, which I think cost something like $40 million and it paid off $400 million in box office sales.
I'm curious to know, are brands coming to you still looking for what I'll call the stereotypical business decision maker and asking for very monotonous things, thinking Bloomberg's
like B2B just ads.
Deliver B2B marketing strategy? Yeah. Or are you finding that new brands or presumably, you know, repeat brands are coming in now, starting to diversify that ask and expecting you to help them kind of paint this picture of what the next gen business consumer looks like?
It's not neither or, but here's like a really interesting stat. And, you know, obviously as a private company, we don't go into, you know, a lot of our financials, but I'll give you just sort of a glimpse. When you look at the partnerships of ours that partner with us on one or two platforms, we have a normalized attrition rate, let's say 70-30%. When you find a partner who looks at how can we engage across your platform and talk to your consumers across three platforms, that attrition rate actually goes down from 30% or 20% to, you know, like 15%. In four platforms, it goes down even more. Five platforms, it becomes non-existent. We almost find that we are, you know, having conversations with these partners that are completely more about the idea and how to bring the idea to life than just a
where it's going to go.
Where is it going to run and where is it going to go?
Yeah.
So our most successful partnerships are at that higher end of the spectrum where people say idea first and how can you bring it to life or what's the strategy, or at the programmatic end of the spectrum, which is growing, you know, triple digit percentages off of low comps, but it will be a significant eight-figure revenue stream this year, up from essentially zero back in the end of 2013, early 2014. And so the area that we're really losing out on or we're seeing disappear are these, here's an RFP, just respond and, you know, give us placement where we could just run some ads.
I think that's become pretty in vogue not to RFP now. Yeah. Right. Like,
but even
generally,
if it's not an RFP, it's sort of even the like, I have like a few $100,000. Can you just run this on, you know,
X?
Like, it's just not happening as much.
Yeah. And I just think that it's an interesting time where, you know, what you just talked about are polar opposite sides of the spectrum. And so this idea of like what exists in the middle represents a really interesting paradigm shift for this industry. It's like you've got one end of the continuum that is pushing innovation and ideation and really strong strategic. It seems like for you, going deep vertically and really getting the best experience versus spreading yourself thin horizontally is the way to best use your platform. And then you've got the other guys that are after this really lucrative audience of business decision makers, investors, and what have you.
I mean, the one thing to remember with programmatic is it's
I want to go in there.
My definition of programmatic is this belief that anything that can be digitized will ultimately be digitized. And if it is digitized, it will be bought and sold by computer. Okay, that's it.
Yep. Agreed.
And we agree.
We made every mistake possible when we first started our programmatic approach back in 2014. And I fault myself for that. You know, I came on board and
I fault you too.
I will gladly, you know, I learned more through my mistakes than any other area, in the past few years, in the programmatic area, where in year one, we made the wrong partnerships and we had the wrong perception of programmatic. We had the wrong perception as to go to market strategy. And I mean, to give Google credit, and they don't get a lot of credit, a lot where people are complimenting them to the level that they deserve. Like, their Google AdX team and the people that we work with over there have been absolutely phenomenal in sort of helping us course correct and look at how we should be building our stack properly and how we should be thinking about, you know, go to market. And one of the things that we did with them, and it was an eye-opening test, was on a random day, we opened up our inventory and we sold it at $1. On the open exchange. And then a week later on the exact same day, you know, and with like no major sort of changes or variances, we opened up the exact same inventory and we sold it at $100 CPM. And the exact same advertisers bought it at $100 as they bought it at $1. And it was just an eye-opening moment for us where it showed that, like, a lot of times people think that you have to just give away the inventory at $1. And if you have premium inventory, there's a lot that you should be thinking about more than just how do I move it.
In our last episode, we just talked about the idea that, like, if that's the inventory we have to use right now, and that's as far as programmatic has advanced, why aren't we taking measures and steps to at least be innovative within that creative space?
Exactly. So that we can change that outcome, so that you can wake up that Tuesday. We can all wake up on that glorious Tuesday. and there is no 300 by 250.
I love this Tuesday thing. Can this last forever?
Yeah, like, there's a Giving Tuesday. We should make our own advertising.
So we have a little game that we play.
Oh, I was hoping we were going to do it.
We're going to play it with you. We're going to play with you. This is a Keith that I rarely see.
Very composed.
Well, you're always composed, okay. But it's like this very kind of like placid. You when we're in meetings, you're like,
He's not selling right now. No. He's chatting.
This has nothing to do with selling. This is a conversation.
He doesn't sell with us. Okay, so. Wink, wink. all right. So kill by DIY. This is a very special game, Keith Grossman. Are you willing to take
the plunge?
Okay. So what?
What would you kill?
What would you kill in this industry?
What would you buy? And what would you do it yourself?
Okay, can you give me an example?
Yeah, so some people say I would kill Netflix, I would buy Amazon, and I would DIY.
Do Twitter yourself.
Yeah.
And would that mean start afresh? And
You can do it better.
Okay, so if I could kill anything, it would be traditional spots.
TV spots.
Said, like TV spots.
30 seconds.
The 30 seconds and the 300 by 250s and the 720.
Traditional.
In that regard.
Real estate.
Yes.
Inventory.
I hate.
I thought
standard.
You were going to say you hated me.
No, I would never hate
the way
you.
That you just said.
No, you were just like, one thing I hate, and we've talked about this. Laura had a great rant one day about the pre-roll ad. And like Joe Marchese of Fox just came out saying that they're going to do six-second ads, I think, with YouTube, so like shorter formats. But I have this huge issue. Every time I hear 30 seconds, it's just – it's not the length of time either.
I had this
standard
awakening
ad
today.
Format. It's like, to your point, going back to Daddy, Will You Read Me branded content, it's like, give me something that's good, and I'll watch it for 33 seconds for – 11 seconds for, and
look at the Geico ad, the 2 second ad that like does everything in 2 seconds and then it pauses and then like everything continues on against a pause screen except for one variable, like the dog
yeah,
walking away.
True.
And it was like, you watch it forever. And if you know, like a great example of like one of my favorite ads that I watched.
Get closer.
Sorry. See, now I was so laid back.
You're so late. I know.
I'm so laid back. I'm like sitting back in the room. But no, one of my favorite recent ads that I've seen is the Nike race to break 2 hours.
Yeah. Which great marathons.
I mean, first off, talk about an amazing ad. I watched, I rooted.
I rooted.
I retweeted.
But was that an ad? Because in my opinion, that, like, it delivered on the brand.
It was ad format,
but
it was
entertainment.
It was, but it was still in an ad format. And it was still in, like, what, 2 minutes? Like, well, when it launched, it was like a 90-second spot or something.
They created all the supporting content for it. They had much longer form stuff if I wanted to get it. I watched and I continued to engage with it. I mean, I don't know if, like, I think that's just great content.
If people are only watching 3 seconds of video on Facebook, could we start selling second increments?
Like, well, if people wanted an interesting new perspective.
Like, if you wanted to do an 11-second ad. If you wanted to do a 14-second ad, well, so if you wanted to do...
My big issue with time is not that it's a bad metric. I actually think it's
not a bad metric.
The problem is that there's no standardization to understand if time is good or not good, right? So if you take... Time, by the way, is the best equalizer of any sort of the whole industry. Like, it's the only commodity that every single person has the exact same amount of. It's the only commodity that you can't hoard, right?
That's right.
So, like, you have to actually give it away every day.
And it's the only commodity that's being completely challenged,
correct?
Right? Like,
and but then here's the issue, right? Without a standardization of time, if I said to you, the average time on my site reading an article was 5 minutes, you would say that's a really good engagement. But what if I then told you that the only article that I was referencing off was like a picture of a gerbil, right? or 50 words,
right.
then you actually have someone who's a really slow reader. Whereas, you know, like, you have to actually start to understand, like, how time should be measured and standardized against content that inspires you or informs you or entertains you, which is all going to be completely different. Once they solve that standardization of time, then it becomes a really impressive and valuable commodity. But until then, like, there's no really great way in which you could say that all time can be equal, or like 3 seconds on one site is
That's
worth
my point.
More or less.
That's
Guys,
my point.
I have a whole new perspective on this.
Can I say
in
when
the
you
last
sa-
24
wait,
hours.
Can I say something?
Wait,
hold on. Keith, when you said they haven't solved it yet, guess who the they is? It's us.
I know. As an industry.
So I have a thought.
I agree with you.
My heart's racing.
Okay, go. this is what happens all the time.
Can I sit back for this? Because I'm not going to talk for the
totally
next episode.
Leave.
I'm going to sit back and
It might only be three seconds.
Take your shoes off.
Okay. But we have an option? This
is
fantastic.
Do whatever you want.
Hey, look.
So I had a meeting recently with Vice, and I actually think that Viceland is doing this better than anybody. And they I am not a rabid consumer of the platform. I sometimes scan what's happening on Viceland. If I catch something interesting, I'll tune in. I am a cord cutter. I'm not somebody who sits in front of my TV. I'm lucky I get 5 seconds to go to the bathroom these days. But I think what's interesting about what Viceland says in their presentations, which I actually think is something they need to bring to the forefront and exploit, they use this term that they believe that they are the stickiest network when it comes to use of what they call interstitials, which is what the industry would call commercial time. And they don't give a shit if it's programming in 5 minutes or it's programming in 5 seconds. They seek to make whatever that time is they need to fill in content as educational, aspirational, informational, whatever it is, but it's fucking entertaining. And it is not meant to hawk a brand. It's meant to provide some sort of value exchange within whatever that length of time is, and they seek to fill it with the most important content for whatever
That's
that
the
purpose
point.
Is. And so I think, like, you know, you said, what is Joe Marchese's coming out with 6-second ads on Fox, and you've got Turner pushing 2-minute pods and less of them. But in reality, are we just perpetuating bad behavior and trying to use time as a way to, you know, self? I agree that the content has to be. I actually don't think time's
the
issue. I think it's the content.
It is the content, but the time thing is like part of the equation, right? And as someone said this to me, her name is Addie, and I can't remember her last name right now, but from Decoded, and she said something the other day, and she was like, "Listen, at the end of the day, we have a huge time issue." Right? You have more and more content flooding and less time to look at it. So you have a time and space issue that's occurring. And so I do think that that's important. But you're talking about quality.
Yeah, I would say whatever. I'm in the camp of quality. If you put something compelling, I don't care if it's 20 minutes or 20 seconds. If it's great content, I'm going to watch it.
That's totally right.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But anyway, this is your game.
Yeah, this is your game. Sorry. So you were killing.
I was really thrilled. I was deflecting you guys for so long.
I'm sorry. So, all right, you're killing. You're killing standardization.
If I could, so buy is defined as.
As it is today.
Like, I would just, I like.
Go out and acquire.
You're like, this needs to be a part of what I'm doing.
A Bloomberg?
Whatever.
Whatever.
He's Grossman. Okay, so like, LLC, whatever.
You might say you want to buy a Nathan's hot dog. I mean, like, stand. Not one dog.
That's. I would buy Amazon. Like, I think that the infrastructure.
I hope you got a lot of money.
I think that what they're doing is so interesting. I think that they're laying a ecosystem on top of, you know, platforms that can engage with the consumer, and that at the end of the day, like the Alexa, you know, is just another touch point. The Echo Show, just another touch point. Their homepage, their mobile experience, just another touch point, and they can provide services at a level that I think is just so endlessly fascinating. My do it better would be like a third party measurement in Facebook or Google.
Yes, I love it.
Well, Keith Grossman, he never disappoints.
Well, thank you so much for having me on this.
And if people want to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
KGrossman10 at Bloomberg.net.
There are really 10 of you?
No, Bloomberg goes by like weird numbers. But I'll tell you this is that, you know, like, as you know, my best athleticism is emailing.
That is the truth. Right.
And I wore number 10 when I played soccer, so I knew I liked you.
Awesome. But it's a .net, not .com.
Anyway, thank you for coming
on. Thanks for coming on. We wish you much success. We are excited to see the launch of Bloomberg 24/7. What is the name of the show or the network?
The network is to be named.
Let's not make it Bloomberg Verified.
Well, I think that ship has sailed.
I'm just kidding. You're not even.
Why do you have to end on such a mean note?
Right? We can cut it.
Because I like
to. No, we'll you can keep no, this I gotta, in. No, I want you to keep because this in. I want the world to see the Alexa I know.
Exactly.
Right? This is exactly. He said it.
This is it. Right?
I love it.
And on that, let's end.
Thanks for coming.
We're always razzing you.
No, it's totally fine. You know, I'm very sensitive. I'm going to go home and cry.
Keith Grossman, CRO of Bloomberg, everyone. Thanks,
Thank you.
Keith.
Thank you.
So that's it.
Dirty Dozen.
Keith
episode
Grossman.
12.
Squeaky clean Keith Grossman. Thank you for listening to Adlandia. Keith, thanks for being on. We have a few more thanks. Cameron Drews, our producer.
What up, Cameron Drews?
Matt Turk.
Our other executive producer, who, by the way, Matt, where the hell are you?
I don't know. I just emailed him. When are you coming to New York?
I want that
Living
guy's
in
life.
Sun Valley.
Yeah, riding his horses. We'll be waiting for you here in Brooklyn.
With Andy Bowers.
Andy Bowers, who we love. Jacob Weisberg, who's just always a gem we see around the office. Thank you for all of your support. All of our friends in Adlandia, especially on Twitter, blowing it up. We are having so much fun engaging with you, answering your questions. Keep them coming.
We're going to actually open up lines. So keep engaging with us. Keep talking to us about things because we will open up lines and have a really good conversation with all of the people who are engaging with us on Adlandia across the different platforms.
So we'll be back with an all new Adlandia in 2 weeks with one of our favorite girl boss executives,
Linda Boff,
CMO of GE. Have a good one, everybody.
When people think that this is the scariest time in the industry, I couldn't disagree more. I think that this is the most fascinating time in the industry.
I agree.
As long as you're willing to, you know, disregard necessarily sort of like the way things were and you start almost dreaming as to what is possible. It's unbelievably exciting.
Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.